Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. The podcast where we navigate the ever-shifting landscape of federal procurement and fiscal law. I'm Major Ellie Sewell.
And I'm Major Jason Floyd. Today's episode, we're going to continue on the path down the revolutionary FAR overhaul. Specifically, we're diving into intellectual property. However, this podcast is focused on the Department of War, and so we're not going to talk about FAR Part 27. Instead, we're covering the significant updates to DFARS Part 227.
Jason, before we dive in, let's talk about what DFARS Part 227 was.
Great idea. I always appreciate when you tell me to slow down instead of going right to the meat of things. Yeah, so DFARS Part 227 is the department's rule book for intellectual property. It displaces the FAR entirely for the War Department, and it provides all of the default clauses for IP-related matters, from patents to copyrights, from validations to challenges. When the DOW buys a widget or a software license from a company, DFARS 227 dictates the rights to those blueprints, the code, and the ability to share it.
Exactly. And this rulebook just got a comprehensive rewrite. The whole structure has been split into two new hemispheres.
Yeah, it used to be like quadrants, right? Now it's apparently hemispheres. This is the new term that the War Acquisition University is using.
The new subpart 227.71 handles non-commercial products and services, while, you guessed it, 227.72 handles the commercial side.
You got it. And similarly, instead of separating the clauses for non-commercial technical data and non-commercial computer software, the DFARS now contains a unified clause, like a super clause. It took the 7013 and 7014 clauses that a lot of you are familiar with and combined them into a new clause at RFO DFARS 252-227-7989.
Did the merger create any substantive changes?
Not that I can see. It lowered the word count for sure, but that's really about it. So let's talk about the legends and markings in the new master validation clause at 252.227.7997.
Remind me, what are legends and validations in this context?
Fantastic question. So legends are not just stories, although I like to listen to them. They're markings to show what rights the government has in the technical data or computer software. That's the legend, right? So validation is just a term used for the government auditing those kind of IP stickers. If you put a sticker on the technology saying that the government has limited rights, then the government has the right to challenge or validate that claim to make sure that no one's mistaken or overreaching.
So the change here is that the government just gave itself more time to do that. 3 years wasn't enough, apparently.
That's right, yeah. So the timeline for validation jumped up to 6 years after the final payment or delivery to challenge a contractor's assertions whenever the government receives those legends.
But they extended the time, but they're also wanting to resolve these issues earlier, though?
That's right. The old guidance told contracting officers to avoid challenging restrictions prior to contract award. The RFO flips that, directing contracting officers to resolve validity questions prior to award.
Cue the pre-award protest.
Exactly. But here's my favorite sneaky language change. And I say sneaky, but it's probably intentional. So the overhaul explicitly states that agencies should make the determination of source of development of funds when it comes to segregability.
Jason, I'm not sure I know what you just said.
Yeah, me neither, right? segregability comes from the idea that because each product is usually made up of subcomponents, right? So the rights to the product should be determined at the smallest subcomponent level practicable, right? So if it's a system of systems, then the rights should be determined at that lowest subsystem level. It's like peeling apart an onion to see who paid for which layers.
So it's more like peeking inside of a product to see which specific nuts, bolts, or lines of code were developed at the contractor's private expense and which were funded by the government.
Exactly. You got it, Ellie. And historically, the contractor is the one who really controlled that analysis. But this new wording seems to shift that dynamic, putting the agency in the driver's seat for making that determination of who funded what.
We also lost some parts in this overhaul. Subpart 227.70 regarding infringement claims, gone.
Yep.
Subpart 227.6 for foreign licenses got demoted to the PGI, which means it's just internal guidance for KOs now.
Yep. You got it all. And then also the boilerplate language for special works and existing works clauses, though the revision deletes them entirely. So now you actually have to negotiate those licenses on a case-by-case basis.
So do we have to actually negotiate that as the lawyers?
Well, luckily the KOs do, not okay, us, good. Right?
I don't want to talk to people.
the bottom line then is this portion of the RFO really affects templates, but not so much as to the, you know, the substance of the right schemes or one's knowledge of those issues.
Well, thanks for explaining all these new sections of the DFARS 227 to me. It's not an area I am very familiar with, so thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ellie.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We'd love to hear from our listeners. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes from today's episode. The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, Department of the Air Force, or the Department of War.